Jesus knew the promises of God and explained how those promises would be fulfilled in a way that would change the world. He told them that a new kingdom was at hand. It is always the word that changes our perspective from disappointment to hope. Finally, they saw him in the midst of their disappointment. How powerful it is when we can look up and see God, even when our circumstances are ongoing. They got up at once. Their wonder came back. When our hope is renewed, we are strengthened to move forward. Jesus always walks with us through our disappointment, through our heartaches, leading us to recover our wonder, leading us to something better ahead. He is the one who helps us remember that although the unexpected happened to us, He'll never leave us. Jesus was there for me in every unexpected disappointment. He was there for Adrian and Jane. He was there for Amanda. And He is there for you, right now, wherever you are. Managing disappointment. We all experience disappointments. All of us have expectations, whether big or small, that have not been met. Friends break their word. Our marriage ends. A colleague betrays us. Our kids don't turn out like we hoped. We never have the child we long for. We never find our soulmate. We don't get the promotion. We lose our retirement fund. A dream turns into a nightmare. We disappoint ourselves by saying or doing something we regret. But despite how we feel, all the disappointment in the world will never change the promises of God, the reality of Jesus, or His destiny for our lives. None of our broken dreams, personal heartaches, or shattered plans can stop His desire for us to fulfill our purpose. The disappointment is real. The consequences can be devastating. To keep moving forward, we must learn to be resilient like Sophia. We must learn to trust like a little child. We must learn to manage our disappointments well so we can hop on another ride full of renewed hope. Otherwise, while we're stuck in the disappointment behind us, we'll miss the adventure God is setting before us. I don't know why Amanda is still single, and neither does she, but we both trust Him. I don't know why I had a miscarriage between having my two girls, but I trust Him. I don't know why women and men are trafficked all over the world, but I trust Him, and I choose to be part of the solution. I don't know why I wasn't miraculously and instantly healed of cancer, but I'm thankful for all I went through to be well. I don't know what has broken down along the way in your life. I don't know why your life has experienced unexpected events, but will you join me in trusting God once again? What one experience has stopped you in your tracks? What one experience has shaken you to your core and stolen all your confidence? What one experience have you believed disqualifies you for the purpose to which God called you? Do you see how it's what we do with our disappointments that determines our destiny? If we don't go through our hardships, we may move on in years, but our life stops at the point of our greatest disappointment. We either go through what happens and manage the disappointments well, or they manage us. Sophia managed her disappointment, and mine, well. But I didn't, because of one experience, just one experience. My future adventures at Disneyland were tainted. I showed up physically, but not mentally. I began missing out on precious time with my girls because I wasn't engaged in the moment. I let disappointment manage me, my emotions and my responses. I remember the day God told me to put my phone away and be present. The girls had hopped on a ride together, and as I watched them take off laughing and squealing, I realized how I wanted to be living that moment on the ride with them, totally carefree. I didn't want to be checking my phone and catching up on emails. As I stood there, wondering how I'd gotten off course, God took me back to that moment on Peter Pan's flight and showed me how, though I hadn't really realized it, I'd let one experience alter my viewpoint. I had become stuck in a moment, and my perspective of disappointment had caused me to disengage from an important purpose to be present with and enjoy Catherine and Sophia. Has it ever occurred to you that if you revisit your disappointment, God can give you a new perspective on it, one that can become a tool to help others, that you can take what he gives to you and pass it on? This is the very principle the Apostle Paul describes in his second letter to the church at Corinth. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, the Father of compassion and the God of all comfort, who comforts us in all our troubles so that we can comfort those in any trouble with the comfort we ourselves receive from God. 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verses 3 and 4. Has it ever occurred to you that God can use your disappointments to set a new trajectory for you, one that gets you closer to your destiny? That's something I've experienced over and over again. All the disappointments in my life have ultimately become tools I could use to serve others. I will not let the enemy get the last word, because I believe there are divine appointments beyond all our disappointments. This was a lesson Amanda learned as well. A date with destiny. When Amanda broke up with Mr. Too Good to Be True, she never saw him again. I remember telling God, "I didn't need that," Amanda said. And I felt like God replied, "You exactly needed that." For 2 months, I was embarrassed, in shock, hurt, angry, grieving. And then the disappointment in my personal life spilled over into my work and leadership. I realized deep down that I was disappointed professionally and even spiritually. I thought, if this is living, I really don't want to live anymore. But deep down, I knew that wasn't God's will for my life. It wasn't truth. God was using the disappointment of another breakup to reveal other issues rooted in my heart. And I knew I needed to process all of this in a healthy and therapeutic way. It was this perfect storm of feeling like a failure in every area of life that finally pushed me to seek out a Christian counselor. I knew I needed someone who could help me sort through all the painful emotions, thoughts, and questions that were bombarding me. I love how Amanda refused to stay stuck in that place of despair by taking the steps she needed to take to find healing and wholeness. Amanda is now 36 and still dating. Her pursuit of God is still unrelenting. "I met a guy at the beach recently," Amanda said, "a perfect gentleman. After we dated a month or so, I told the Lord, 'God, I don't want to walk down this road unless I know it will have a good outcome. I don't want to go through pain again.' And God was so clear. 'You'll never know without walking the road. There will always be hurt. You'll be hurt if it works out, and you'll be hurt if it doesn't. Relationships aren't about the end result. They're about what I have in them for you, for both of you. I give you to each other, for each other, even if only for a season. Isn't that enough? Do you trust me with the process?" Do you see the shift in perspective? From selfish to unselfish. From resisting fear to embracing faith. From anxiety about the unexpected to trusting God even more. All the result of a perfect storm that led to a perfect transformation, which is the process of growth the Apostle Paul describes as working out our salvation. He writes, "Therefore, my dear friends, as you have always obeyed, not only in my presence, but now much more in my absence, continue to work out your salvation with fear and trembling. For it is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose." Philippians chapter 2, verses 12 to 13. Trusting God is a series of choices, not a one-time event. And it requires something of us, which is why Paul calls it work. It means choosing again and again and again to stay connected to God and his process daily. Process disorientation through God's perspective immediately. Risk, be vulnerable, and believe resiliently. Ask God for help when we don't have the answers, courageously. Choosing to trust God is part of how we live an intentional life. We choose not to avoid disappointment, not to avoid pain, but rather to learn to manage our disappointments well and to embrace the truth that the new adventure ahead looks different than we expected. Disappointment is a place we pass through, not a place we stay. God wants us emotionally engaged in His purposes, living in the moment, fully alive, hopeful. He wants us to let Him restore our hearts so we can keep moving forward and fulfill His good purpose for our lives, even when people and life fail us. Chapter 4. When the unexpected betrays. Forgiving freely. Loss is the uninvited door that extends us an unexpected invitation to unimaginable possibilities. Craig D. Jonesborough. Mummy, Sophia quietly began as she smoothed out the covers on her bed and fidgeted with the edge. Angela invited the girls to her house a couple of weekends ago, but not me. Staring at the ceiling as I lay beside her, I hid my initial reaction behind my listening face. Inside, my heart winced with pain at the sting of her being excluded by the rest of the girls, a group of friends who did everything together, and I could feel what was coming next. "She's been talking about me," Sophia said as her lips began to tremble. "She made fun of me the other day in front of everyone, and then they all walked off together without me." We just laid down on Sophia's bed to talk and pray before she went to bed. One of my favorite times of the day with my baby girl. She'd been unusually quiet around the house for almost a week, completely out of character for a child who talks or sings every waking hour of the day. She had been withdrawn, lost her spark, and seemed anxious. Definitely not herself. Sophia is highly sensitive and deep, but normally she is quirky, happy, and fun-loving. She loves theatre and acts out everything from Broadway plays to historical speeches, boldly, loudly, joyfully, for the whole world to hear. Because she'd been unusually quiet, I gently probed a few times, trying to get her to open up. But she'd deflected each time, denying anything was wrong. Typical of a kid at that age. Nonetheless, my mothering antenna remained up and on high alert, watching and praying over whatever it was. I had been patiently waiting for something to come to light. For the moment she would be ready to talk, I knew it would only be a matter of time. Now it was spilling out all over the place. I saw them all pointing at me when we were at play practice after school, Sophia sobbed, and choked out more of the story. I know they were talking about me because they don't think I'm as good as some of the other girls. Her tender heart was utterly broken, and the more she talked, the more mine was too. I could hear her confusion as she tried so hard to sort out all her feelings and make sense of how they had acted. I could feel how helpless she was to find resolve, how she no longer felt like she belonged. I wanted so badly just to hold her and absorb all her pain so she wouldn't have to go through any of this. "They act like they don't want me around," Sophia cried. "I don't even know why." Inside, I cried too. I knew she had no way of knowing what they had actually said, but she didn't have to. She knew the spirit of it, and as much as I hesitated to admit it, I did too. My stomach wrenched at the thought of her watching them and realizing she was at the center of their conversation. I could just see her sweet freckled face reddened with shame, completely at a loss about what to do because she'd been unexpectedly singled out and left out. I could see her standing there dazed from being so blindsided, unable to defend herself. If only I could have been there to catch all the flaming daggers before they pierced her heart. I imagine she fought bravely to swallow burning tears that day, just like I was trying to do now. it would have been much easier on my heart for those girls to have taken a swing at me than at my baby girl. She had been so good to them, all of them. The care I'd seen her take picking out their birthday presents, the way she lit up when they were all together. How could they? As I held onto Sophia, wanting to comfort and soothe her, I really was consoling both of us. I just wanted to make all the hurt go away. I had been through this with Catherine just a few years earlier, and I was well aware that some things about middle school never change. I wanted to be angry with Angela, with all of them, but I knew what Sophia didn't. Angela's mum and dad were going through a painful divorce, trying to navigate a new normal in a place they'd never expected to be, trying to mend their own broken hearts at the same time they were caring for Angela's. I had no idea how this was all affecting Angela, but I felt sure she was most likely acting out of her own pain of adjusting to all the change. Her world had been shaken, and she was helpless to stop it. As I considered what to say and where to begin, I decided to keep it light for the moment. There would be plenty more conversations in the future, for middle school drama never seems to end. Tonight, Sophia needed love, comfort, and sleep. So I made her laugh, reminded her of who she was in Christ, and reassured her of how much her family loved her and how all the other girls at school liked her so much. I explained how sometimes our friends have a bad day or a bad week and sometimes even a bad year. And before I left the room, I put on her absolute favorite soundtrack and let her sing all of it to me. By the time she fell asleep, she was happy, and I was relieved. I knew her pain. God made us for relationships, and He made relationships for us. He created us to be connected to Him and to live our lives in community with others. Despite the fractures that can occur from differences of opinion or perspectives, friendship is truly one of God's greatest gifts to us. That's what I wanted Sophia to learn most of all. I love people with a passion and am deeply committed to my friends. I can't imagine doing life without my girlfriends. They are such a source of joy, companionship, and inspiration for me. I am loyal to my old friends, and I love making new ones. And most of all, I love introducing my friends to my other friends so that they will become friends. The only challenge is that having friends and being a friend requires interacting with real-life human beings. Human beings with quirks, flaws, emotions, challenges, baggage, and expectations. It's understandable why our relationships can get messy sometimes. I wish I could have told Sophia that after middle school, all her relational challenges would end and that she would live happily ever after. But I knew it wasn't true. This journey of following Jesus means that if we are going to keep our hearts open, soft, sensitive, and connected to humanity, then we must realize that we are never going to be bulletproof to unexpected pain and heartache. No matter how carefully we pick our friends, no matter how long we've known them, no matter how old we are. I once had a dear friend whom I loved wholeheartedly and with whom I shared so many fun times. We had endless heart-to-heart talks about God, ministry, life, family, fashion, movies, books, food, and of course, coffee. We shared an incredibly strong bond. We could talk about the most serious issues on earth one moment and then be laughing hysterically the next. She was one of those people with whom I didn't have to second-guess my words or filter my responses. There was simply an ease between us, and we had just enough differences to keep our friendship interesting, engaging, and evolving. She was one of the people I could call for anything, a true BFF. Until the day she just wasn't. She cut me off. No warning, no conversation, no explanation. I felt just like Sophia, bewildered, confused, shocked. I tried to make sense of it all, but no matter how many memories and conversations I relived, it still didn't make sense. I had let her into my inner world, into my heart. I had let her into the space where she had the power to wreck my heart, and she did. I had trusted her, bared my soul, risked being seen by her, and she had rejected me. Perhaps there is no greater pain between friends than the pain of being seen and then unexpectedly rejected. When she cut me off, I felt so lost about what to do, what to say, and how to respond, just like a middle school girl. I felt as though I had been knocked off my feet, dumped on the floor, and left gasping for air. And I needed God to help me catch my next breath. I needed him to help me process the hurt and wrap my mind around what seemed incomprehensible. How could she do this? She was my friend. I loved her and had shared so much of my life with her. We both loved Jesus and wanted to see his kingdom flourish. How was this possible? Rejection was the last thing I expected from someone I had trusted the most. I felt like King David when he penned the gut-wrenching words about his own dear friend. If an enemy were insulting me, I could endure it. If a foe were rising against me, I could hide. But it is you, a man like myself, my companion, my close friend, with whom I once enjoyed sweet fellowship at the house of God as we walked about among the worshippers. Psalm 55, verses 12 to 14. Like David, I felt gutted to be on the receiving end of a severed relationship when I wasn't even sure why it ended. And all of it triggered the rejection of my past. That was the Achilles heel of my soul. All the rejection and abandonment I had experienced as a child, all the shame. My knee-jerk response was to shut down and pull back, to draw a line in the sand and never let anyone cross it again, to erect a wall around my heart and never again let anyone in. But I knew better, and I wanted to do better. I knew the consequences of hardening my heart, and I didn't want to grow bitter and resentful, judgmental and critical. I didn't want to get stuck in emotional quicksand. I had lived too much life and gotten unstuck from too many past places to forfeit my future and all that God wanted to continue doing in and through me. I had come too far, gained too much ground in my heart to give it all up now. So, like I had so many times before, I sought to sort out all my feelings and the facts I understood. I knew I had to navigate them in a healthy way so my emotions didn't cloud what I knew to be truth about God, about myself, about my friend. But I must admit, I have the capacity to overthink obsessively, and trying to figure out what went wrong consumed me. In my book, Unashamed, I describe that one of my greatest strengths and weaknesses is my ability to analyze everything. Like most people, I find it difficult to trust God when I do not understand what is happening. But trying to reason through the unreasonable only leads me into an endless loop of mental searching that leads nowhere. And this time was no different. I spent weeks analyzing every conversation, rereading every text, rehashing every time we were together, trying desperately to figure out what I had done to deserve this. If you're an obsessive analyzer like me, then you know as well as I do, it doesn't solve anything. I also knew from all I had walked through in life that when I feel something so deeply, I shouldn't do what many of us are tempted to do and what I often had done in my past. I should not try to run from the pain by burying myself in my work. I shouldn't try to numb the pain by ignoring the entire situation, acting as though nothing had happened, as though I didn't care. I did care, deeply. I knew that I needed to deal with it, work through it, and not let it derail me. My life and ministry are built on relationships. Everything I do is all about trying to connect people to God and to help them love each other. The enemy would have loved for me to harden my heart, shut down, and withdraw from any genuine friendships. He tried to convince me that life is easier if we keep people at a distance, erect a wall around our hearts, and prevent people from getting in too close. Even though I had many thriving friendships, this pain was taking all my focus. And I almost believed the lie of the enemy, that pursuing true, intimate, godly friendships was just too hard at my age and stage in life. I knew I needed to start with forgiving. After all, that is what I spend my life teaching others to do. But it is never as easy as it sounds, especially when our heart is broken. I knew I couldn't let what happened to me become what I believed about myself. Just because someone hurt me didn't mean I was unworthy, unlovable, or unkind. It didn't mean I was worth less or worthless. It didn't mean I was not a good friend or capable of being a good friend. But that's how I felt. No matter how many times I tried to refute all the lies bombarding my mind, if I were a good friend to her, she wouldn't have cut me off without an explanation. If I were a good friend to her, she would hear me out and make time for me. If I were a good friend to her. But I had been a good friend to her. I had done the best I knew. And regardless of what I might have done wrong, I truly loved her and wanted the best for her. I wanted our friendship to last. I never imagined it ending, especially not like this. If I were going to move beyond this pain and not get stuck in this one dark moment of my life, I knew I had to quit obsessing over past events and fall into the arms of God, letting Him help me sort through all my emotions and get control of my runaway train thoughts. When I reached out to my friend to talk and find a resolve, it was to no avail. She didn't want to talk it through with me any more than it seemed Sophia's friends wanted to talk to her. She had simply shut down and shut me out. Invite Jesus in. None of us start out in life planning to be hurt or to hurt others, but it happens. People fail us, and we fail people repeatedly. It happens in our childhood and continues all the way through our adulthood. Our lives are intertwined with everyone around us, just as God designed. But we are all a part of a flawed humanity. None of us ever arrive. So it stands to reason that every time we open our hearts to one another, every time we're thrown together into each other's worlds, we will, quite possibly, hurt one another. Whether it occurs in our dating, marriage, work, or friendships, it is going to happen. I've heard so many stories from women who started out their careers full of enthusiasm and talent, only to be devastated by life-altering criticism that postponed or derailed their success. They didn't know how not to believe everything someone in a position of authority said and how not to let it define who they were. So they minimized their talent and settled for a less fulfilling position. They believed the lies that they were not smart enough, not gifted enough, not savvy enough. I've listened to stories from women who married the love of their life only to have the marriage eventually crumble. Because of all the hurtful words thrown at them, they believed they were a failure and that they were unworthy of a loving relationship. Just because we experience failure, it doesn't make us a failure, but that's hard to process when we don't know how. My own aunt was married for 25 years when she learned her best friend had been having an affair with her husband for 18 of those years. She was devastated. And it was so hard watching her internalize lies about herself because of their deceitful actions. She agonized over not understanding how she never knew. She questioned everything she'd ever done or said that might have made both of them betray her. She obsessed over what she could have done differently, believing she was the one who had failed. We have all been through deeply painful situations where words or actions significantly wounded us and threatened to derail us, whether it was from a friend, a spouse, a colleague, or a mentor. When we were blindsided by a divorce, upstaged by a co-worker, shamed publicly by a leader, financially ruined by a business partner, judged by a family member, rejected by a lifelong friend, betrayed by a ministry partner. We've never forgotten those times when we lost our peace, joy, and hope, and sometimes our vision, passion, and purpose. Unexpected emotional wounding is so deeply painful because it is unexpected. It hits when our defenses are down and our trust levels are up. How critical then to understand that even when people leave us and hurt us, God never leaves us nor forsakes us. He understands what it feels like to be kicked in the gut, to have the wind knocked out of us, and he cares. He promises to be there for us and to help us. If your heart is broken, writes the psalmist, you'll find God right there. If you're kicked in the gut, he'll help you catch your breath. Psalm 34:18, Message Bible. Even when people are unfaithful, God is always faithful. Every time we're deeply hurt, we're faced with the opportunity to let that wound define us for a season or for the rest of our lives. Maybe we've altered our course, scaled back our dreams, or given up on them altogether. Maybe we've believed something about ourselves, consciously or subconsciously, that may not be true. That's what I had faced more than once, and that's what Sophia was grappling with on that unforgettable night. Reframe your question. I remember when the initial shock of my friend hurting me began to subside, and I slowly realized that I had to work through all my hurt without her. It was a defining moment in my healing, a moment of reckoning, of turning my attention from how deeply hurt I felt to how I could get better. But I really wasn't sure I could do it alone and be as healthy as I wanted to be. And so I decided to get help. When we get a hit out of nowhere that threatens to knock us out, we need wise Christian counsel. I'm a big believer in going to Jesus and to safe people who can help us process unexpected wounds. Because of my past wounds, like those from my childhood, I knew I was vulnerable in this area. So I reached out to a Christian counselor who could help me. I knew that ultimately Jesus is the only one who can truly heal our deepest hurts. But I also knew the value of having someone help me sort out my perspectives and my heart. Unexpected hurts often reveal unexpected pain. And, as strange as it may sound, I wanted to take advantage of this opportunity to be healed of anything lurking under the surface of which I might not have been aware. I've been on this journey long enough now to know that when I feel a certain type of heart pain, it is an invitation from God for a deeper healing he wants to do in me. I have been so broken, wounded, and fragmented that I am a constant work in progress. I've learned to lean into this kind of pain when it happens, even though I know that doing so will hurt, because I so desperately desire the healing I know is on the other side. I know that God sometimes uses relational fractures to show us where we are out of alignment with Him. Maybe our affections are misplaced. It's so easy to have unrealistic expectations of others, to inadvertently want them to love us as only God can, and to set our friendships up for failure. We can't expect people to be Jesus to us. It's too unfair. Jesus is the only true friend who can love us unconditionally and really stick closer than a brother. So it was then, with the counselor's help, that I slowly quit asking, why, God, why? Because honestly, sometimes we may never know. And because that question usually just spirals us into a dark hole that leads nowhere. Instead, I started asking, Jesus, where are you in this? What can you show me through this? What can I learn from this? It wasn't the first time I'd been unexpectedly hurt, so I knew there was always something God wanted to do in me. He didn't cause the hurt. My friend did. But God is always eager to use our circumstances to bring more wholeness into our lives, if we will let him. God is good. God does good. And God uses all things for my good. These are truths I believe with all my heart. So, as I invited him in, I knew he would use this for my good somehow. Reframing my questions changed my perspective. It turned my focus back toward Jesus, where real answers come from. It reconnected me to hope, which meant I was looking forward now and not backward at all the emotional wreckage in my wake. It also set my heart in a direction of letting Jesus mold me further into the kind of friend I had always wanted. Only Jesus could heal me completely. So I took the time to tell Jesus of the loss I felt, like part of my life was missing. And he walked me through the sorrow of how much all of this had hurt me. I grieved the loss of someone I had come to love dearly. I grieved the loss of not having to second-guess my words or filter my responses. I grieved the loss of having a friend who understood me implicitly and let me be myself. I missed all the time and space she filled in my life. I missed all the laughter we shared. I missed all the deep conversations we used to have. I missed the random texts and jokes and prayer requests. And I told him all of this. I allowed myself to be in touch with how I truly felt by being honest with God and myself. And as I did my part, God began to do what only he could do, heal my heart. Forgive freely. Jesus completely forgives us every single time we make a mistake. And he wants us to freely give that same gift to others. He wants us to forgive every offense, no matter how big or how small. Sometimes, when the hurt is deep, it can take longer to heal, and the relationship may never go back to how it was before. In fact, God may not even want that. But there can be peace and grace-giving communication between us. Jesus wants us to practice love, grace, and mercy, especially with those who wound us most, because they are often the most wounded. I have discovered that when I hurt people, and I am devastated by my capacity to wound, it is often because of a broken place in me, a place of ignorance, fear, insecurity, or jealousy I just didn't realize was there. I'm so grateful for the friends who extend grace, love, and forgiveness to me. I'm so thankful for the ones who love me enough to keep walking beside me, despite my shortcomings. In other situations, when I felt like someone had hurt me in a manner that was illogical or irrational, I would often learn later that they had been going through their own pain, or had a wound from their past that was affecting our friendship. It always explained so much. When I realized their pain, I could truly understand and be more understanding. Revelations like that always turned my inwardly fixated thoughts to outwardly focused compassion for what they must be feeling, and allowed me to extend grace toward them. Each time I've been unexpectedly hurt, it has renewed my resolve to be quicker to ask for forgiveness, so I practice ongoing forgiveness as often as possible. As a wife, I can lapse in kindness or attention. Sometimes my fiery Greek emotions get the best of me, and I say things that are unfair. When I realize how I've sounded or what I've done, I ask Nick to forgive me. As a mother, I get plenty of opportunities as well. I love my girls with all my heart. But I don't always get it right, so I ask them to forgive me. I'm a strong woman with convictions and visions and dreams for the future. So as a leader with more than 200 members on our team, I don't always get it right there either. In those times, when I realize I've blown it, I want mercy. No matter the difference of opinion or the differences in personality and interpretation of the circumstances, I want forgiveness and grace. That's what Jesus was wanting his disciples and us to understand when he responded to Peter's question, "Lord, How many times shall I forgive my brother or sister who sins against me? Up to 7 times? Jesus answered, I tell you, not 7 times, but 77 times. Matthew chapter 18, verses 21 and 22. I find it significant that of all the disciples who could have asked Jesus about forgiveness, it was Peter who posed this question. It wasn't long afterward that Peter had to practice an even more difficult kind of forgiveness. He had to forgive himself. It happened the night of the Last Supper, when Jesus and the disciples left the upper room after their Passover meal and walked to the Mount of Olives. Jesus began to speak, and he prophesied that some of them would fall away. It was Peter who quickly spoke up, declaring his devotion. Even if all fall away on account of you, I never will. Matthew chapter 26, verse 33. Truly I tell you, Jesus answered, this very night, before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. Matthew chapter 26, verse 34. But Peter was persistent. Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you. And all the other disciples said the same. Matthew chapter 26, verse 35. Jesus then invited his disciples to go with him to the Garden of Gethsemane. There he invited Peter and the 2 sons of Zebedee to come closer as he poured out his grief. And he asked them, sit here while I go over there and pray. Matthew chapter 26, verse 36. When he returned an hour later, he found them sleeping, and he said to Peter, couldn't you men keep watch with me for 1 hour? Watch and pray, so that you will not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Matthew chapter 26, verses 40 to 41. Jesus went away again to pray a second time, and then a third, and each time returned to find them sleeping. It was after the 3rd time that he woke them up, telling them that his betrayer Judas had come, and he came accompanied by a crowd carrying swords and clubs. The angry mob took Jesus to Caiaphas, the high priest, where teachers of the law and elders had assembled. And it was Peter who followed at a safe distance, eventually positioning himself in the courtyard where he could see and hear what was happening. Now Peter was sitting out in the courtyard, and a servant girl came to him. You also were with Jesus of Galilee, she said. But he denied it before them all. I don't know what you're talking about, he said. Then he went out to the gateway, where another servant girl saw him, and said to the people there, this fellow was with Jesus of Nazareth. He denied it again with an oath. I don't know the man. After a little while, those standing there went up to Peter and said, surely you are one of them. Your accent gives you away. Then he began to call down curses, and he swore to them, I don't know the man. Immediately, a rooster crowed. Then Peter remembered the words Jesus had spoken. Before the rooster crows, you will disown me 3 times. And he went outside and wept bitterly. Matthew chapter 26, verses 69 to 75. Peter was heartbroken over his own human frailty. He had fallen asleep earlier in the garden when Jesus asked them to pray more than once, and now he had denied even knowing Jesus 3 times. He had been fearful for his own life, fearful to be discovered as one of Jesus' disciples. But when he realized all he had done, how he had denied a cherished friend, the true Messiah, someone he loved, his heart was shattered. How many times have we been the one who wounded someone else? How many times have we wished we could wind back time and have a do-over? Whether we are the ones who are wounded or the ones inflicting the pain, our hearts can be just as broken and just as in need of healing. When Peter realized what he had done, he was bitterly disappointed in himself. But despite his tragic failure, Peter went on to fulfill his destiny, just as Jesus had said, "And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it." Matthew chapter 16, verse 18, English Standard Version. God used Peter despite his human imperfections and failings, and through Peter's ministry, the door of the church was open to the Jews, the Samaritans, and the Gentiles, virtually the entire world at that time. But what if Peter had never forgiven himself? What if he'd kept his focus on himself and all his pain, stuck in a moment? Imagine if he'd let his broken heart hold him back. Forgiveness, freely asking for it from God and others, freely offering it to those who hurt us, and even freely extending it to ourselves, is part of how we heal. Imagine if I'd let my broken heart hold me back every time it has been broken. I certainly wouldn't have been whole enough to be the kind of mother Sophia needed that night when she poured out all her hurt to me. And in my marriage, I wouldn't be the kind of wife that I learnt to be. I would be making Nick pay for things he'd never done, because my actions toward him would all be rooted in past hurts and abuse inflicted by other people, some going all the way back to kindergarten. Isn't that what we do when we have unresolved relational wounds? We carry them from one relationship to the next. A new boss shouldn't have to deal with all the wounds from a former boss who didn't know how to lead, guide, and coach us in a healthy manner. A new friend shouldn't have to be assessed based on how the last friend hurt us. A new spouse should never have to pay for what an ex-spouse did. But if we don't invite Jesus in to heal us from the wounds of past relationships, then that's exactly what will happen, whether we realize it or not. We'll hold back, fearful of opening up our hearts freely, unable to understand that just because someone in our past hurt us doesn't mean everyone in our future will. Be open to unexpected blessings. I don't know your story, but I do understand that when we experience heartbreak, it can feel like our story is over, that we have reached a dead end. When people unexpectedly attack us, betray or reject us, overtly or subtly, our souls can become so discouraged that we're tempted to give up. But when we invite Jesus into our messy narrative, as we tell him about our story and about all our pain, then he can start reshaping our perspective, reviving our fragmented heart, and restoring our ability to feel, love, and care. As we invite him in, he can refill our heart with compassion, just as he did when he saved us, and we can begin to trust again. Trusting again is the way God wants all our stories to unfold, because trust is the fuel that keeps us moving forward in faith, embracing all the unexpected adventure that God has planned for us. God created us to do life with people, and in order to fulfill our purpose, we will need to build and nurture relationships, connections that involve people who are very human and could quite possibly hurt us. We must learn how to guard our hearts and yet, at the same time, be vulnerable to those we pull in close. My friend, who I had pulled in so close, eventually did agree to talk heart to heart, and I learned she had been hurt in a separate situation and was so caught up in her pain and struggle that she didn't realize how much she hurt me. She was simply trying to survive in her own battles, and instead of drawing me in to fight alongside her, she pushed me away. I understood, and I forgave her, but it proved to be one more instance of how hurting people hurt people. If we are to have healthy relationships, then we need to learn how to be good at saying what Jesus said to those who crucified him. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. I want to stay healthy, so I fully forgive others, and I keep putting myself out there, risking new relationships, even if it means I might get hurt. I do my best to share my friends' sad times as well as their happy times. I do my best to overlook offenses and to ask for forgiveness when I offend. I keep choosing to be vulnerable, to keep myself connected to people, because God created us to need each other, to love one another. That was the divine tension Sophia faced. As we continued to talk in that season, she and her friends reunited, but a new dynamic grew among them. The next year, she went to a new school and learned some valuable lessons. Some friends are for a season. Some friends are safe up close, and some are only safe from a distance. We can't bring everyone into our inner circle and trust them equally. Because she learned not to define herself by how others treated her, or to shut off her heart because of unexpected hurt, but let it remain open for unexpected blessings in the future, she easily made new friends. I was delighted one day when she asked if she could have a sleepover with a girl she had met and bonded with at school. Nick and I went upstairs and gave them free rein in the kitchen and TV room. They filled the entire evening with movies and loads of popcorn. Sitting in my room, I couldn't help but overhear their attempts at whispering that turned into hushed giggles and bursts of uncontrollable laughter. As the evening turned into night, it would have been useless to ask them to quiet down. But truthfully, I didn't want to. Catching snippets of their conversations every so often, I couldn't stop smiling. I was so happy she hadn't pulled back and missed the unexpected richness of a great new friendship. Had her journey been paid for? Yes, for her and for me. Had it been worth it? Well, judging by the lack of sleep I got that night, listening to all the giggles that never stopped, I think yes. Chapter 5. When the unexpected disillusions, becoming a prisoner of hope. We must accept finite disappointment, but never lose infinite hope. Martin Luther King, Jr. You can get dressed now, Lorianne. Covered only by a light blanket and sheet, Lorianne stirred slightly at the sound of the nurse's voice. Still foggy-headed from the waning sedative, she felt helpless to move, much less get up. The heaviness of her heart and all the years of struggle seemed to weigh her down, pinning her to the bed. Squinting against the harsh fluorescent lights, straining to focus, she tried to will her body into action, but all she could manage was to grasp the outer edge of the blanket. Glancing at her surroundings, she noticed the curtain had been pulled aside, exposing the rest of the recovery room. It appeared as sterile and disappointing as her last sonogram. Where there should have been a bright, pulsing miracle of life, there had been only stillness. Instinctively, her hand went to her abdomen. The place her growing baby had been was now just a knot of grief and anxiety. She had loved him from the moment he was hoped for through all the time she carried him. Her heart had never quit beating for him, even when his gave out. She would never stop loving him, never stop wanting to hold him. "You can get up and get dressed when you're ready," the nurse repeated. The groggy effects of the anesthesia were wearing off, but what remained pushed Lorianne to a jagged edge. And then what? Go home and pretend nothing ever happened? Go back to work and try to act like everything's normal? Nothing is normal, and nothing will ever be normal again. All I wanted was a baby. My baby. The nurse simply meant it as a kind prompt. But Lorianne's frayed mind couldn't stop intensifying her broken heart and the harsh betrayal of her empty womb. "You can get dressed now because you will never be a mother. You will never celebrate Mother's Day. You are flawed, broken, ill-equipped, irreparable, and there's nothing you can do about any of it. Rolling to her side and burying her face in the sheet, Lorianne wanted to cry, wanted to feel the release, but she couldn't. The flare of anger had collapsed into feelings of nothingness and numbness. The calm that always preceded the storm she knew would come. She knew getting dressed wouldn't help anything. It wouldn't erase years of fading hopes. It wouldn't quench the longing in her soul. It wouldn't prepare her for the silence waiting at home. That's where the tears would come. In the profound sadness and loneliness waiting for her in the echoing quiet of her bedroom. No clothes would ever hide her shattered heart or cover all the shame she felt. Nothing was going to shield her from the insensitive things people would say, even if they meant well, especially when they offered, "Don't worry, you can always try again," or, "Well, it's not like losing an actual child." Yes, it was. It was exactly like losing my child. Too many times, those kinds of comments had seared her heart and left her doubled over inside. She had always managed to mumble some niceties, but this time she knew she could never bear it again, because she could never try again. She had fought so hard to stay pregnant every time she had been pregnant, but this time marked the end of a battle she no longer had the strength to fight, a battle that left her no choice but to surrender. She knew the tsunami of emotions would come, as they had each time before. The grief that would evolve into rage, relentlessly crashing into her every waking thought and sleep-deprived dreams. The edge she would topple over every time she overheard women complain about being pregnant or about their children. The bitterness and resentment that would take up long-term occupancy in her heart and become so hard to evict. It was so unfair. All she had ever wanted to be was a mother. From the time she played with dolls as a child to when she babysat as a teen, she imagined what it would be like to chase her own children through the house. The older she grew, whenever someone offered to let her hold a baby, she was already reaching for it, delighted to coo and cuddle. She found so much joy in hosting baby showers for her girlfriends, celebrating each of their newfound joys. When she married, she couldn't wait for the day when she would hold one of her own. It was just a matter of time. But it never occurred to her that time wouldn't be able to give her what she wanted most. Having a baby was the one thing Lorianne had thought every woman could do, and what she'd always believed God intended for her to do. When pregnancy after pregnancy failed, she began to pray like Sarah, like Hannah, like Elizabeth, like every woman called barren in the Bible. And even when she tried all the modern medical efforts those women never were afforded, she found herself in the same familiar place, letting go of what she wanted to hold onto the most. "I tried," Lorianne silently screamed. "I tried so hard." Nothing was as she had envisioned it to be, as she had prayed it would be, as she had hoped it would be. And nothing could silence the never-ending cry of her heart for a child. The cycle of pregnancies unexpectedly ending in miscarriage after miscarriage had taken its toll. Her emotions and her marriage had worn thin, too thin. And now, hopelessness consumed her. When dreams die. Getting up and getting dressed that day began one of the hardest uphill climbs of Lorianne's life, because that day left her grieving the future she would never have. That day left her feeling what we all can experience when our greatest hopes and biggest dreams die, when our lives are unexpectedly interrupted with a finality we couldn't have predicted or controlled. Whether our dream was wrapped up in a baby we wanted so badly, in a marriage that ended abruptly, a business venture that failed, a friendship that unraveled, a ministry that never flourished, or a job opportunity that fell through. In those shattered moments, we can feel so forsaken and alone, helpless and held captive by despair. Feelings of hopelessness can leave us wanting to pull back and rewrite the rest of our lives as a smaller, safer story than the adventurous one God originally planned for us. It's so easy to grow afraid to hope again, especially in the area of our greatest disappointment. When I first met Lorianne, I never would have guessed the heartache she had lived through. I was hosting an A21 awareness trip in Thessaloniki, Greece, for a group of women from her church. And over a lunch of Greek salad with extra feta cheese, we clicked.